afternoon. This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. Ohio voters will see two statewide issues on the November ballot related to marijuana. If passed, Issue 3 would legalize marijuana in the state and allow 10 sites to grow the crop commercially. But Issue 2 would prohibit this type of oligopoly. Today, we're going to try to sort through it all. Our goal is to explain each of the issues on the ballot. We will not be talking about the pros and cons of either issue today. Joining me, three reporters who have been closely following the topic, Nine on Your Side, WCPO.com, government and politics reporter Lisa Bernard-Kuhn and business reporter Dan Monk, along with WVXU's politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Lisa, we'll start with you. There are all kinds of aspects to Issue 3. Let's talk, sort of divide them out. Let's start first with, if this passes, who can grow it?
So if this passes, first you're looking at perhaps who can buy it. This would be legal use, recreational and medical use for individuals 21 and older. If it's a medical situation and you're a child, you would have a parent or a caregiver who would have to apply for some certification, and then you would be able to get your medical marijuana that way. Predominantly, the marijuana would be grown at 10 sites controlled by investors who are backing this campaign. Three of those sites are in Southwest Ohio, and there is some limited home grow use for individuals, and you'd have to apply for that, and I think it's a limit of 4 plants per individual. So that's where you would start. Again, your big base of marijuana coming from these 10 sites, 10 production sites that would be controlled by these investors backing the Responsible Ohio campaign.
And then, Lisa, there are also the processing plants and the retail outlets that would sell this marijuana. And that's a lot of licenses. It's like 1,150 altogether.
That's exactly right. Yeah. From these 10 plants, and you can call them grow facilities, right, production facilities, they would then trickle down to the retailers. The retailers would get their product from these 10 production sites. And you could have up to, I think your number was right, 1,150 licenses for retail operations. And that's where somebody who can legally buy marijuana would go and do that on a recreational basis.
Now, you talked about it, the fact that some people can grow the plants at home. Can anybody do that, or do they have to have a medical reason, or how does that work?
Yeah, the way that it's written into the amendment proposed by Responsible Ohio is that you would have to apply for certification to grow the plants in your home. And we've seen that in other states, and we've seen varying degrees of success in regulating this part of the industry. There are individuals who don't want to put their name on a registry that's controlled by the government, and so they just sidestep this. In Colorado, for example, where we spent some time reporting on this issue, but in Colorado, there's no real penalties if you're caught growing these plants at home. And so the checks and balances there for regulating that piece of the market, it's a very gray area. And there's some question about what would that look like here in Ohio.
Now, in Ohio, at least theoretically, you'd have to apply for a $50 license in order to do a home grow your own.
That's correct.
Yeah. And you can only have up to 8 ounces at your home for personal use.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, these are key things that we've been told.
Enforcing that would be really very difficult.
Right, right. So we were told by, you know, the writers of this amendment and Responsible Ohio that when they were putting this together, they looked across the country at states that had begun to, you know, dig into this recreational legal marijuana world. And they looked at all the regulations on the books there and tried to pull out what seemed to be the best fit for Ohio. And so what you do see in Responsible Ohio's amendment are some very specific features like that. 8 ounces, 4 plants, you have to a $50 registration fee. But what we're finding in these other states is that the regulatory environment for this has been tough to really get your arms around. It's an entire new regulatory framework that a state government has to create to go down this path.
Dan, you've done a little bit of research into some of the folks that wanted to be part of this group of growers, these 10 growers. Talk a little bit about what you found.
Well, that it's basically a Cincinnati business story. Of the 22 people who've been publicly identified as key investors in Responsible Ohio, a dozen of them are Cincinnati-based entrepreneurs, mostly investment managers or, I guess, like angel investors, venture capitalists. And the group includes people like Frank Wood, who founded the WEBN Fireworks, ran WEBN for a number of years, and Woody Taft, who is the great-great-grandnephew mm-hmm. of the president, former yes. president, and his family involved in media investments over the years. They actually are on the same office floor as Frank Wood. They share office space. And in the same building is James Gould, or Jimmy Gould as he's better known, who is an NFL agent, a venture capitalist who basically started the whole thing with Ian James, the Columbus-based consultant, to kind of put together the plan. Jimmy Gould bought into it in a big way and recruited a lot of investors, a lot of them from Cincinnati, to join him.
Now, are they the investors all sort of working together on this then to get this passed? What are you finding?
Well, the way it has operated is that they all pledge $2 million, and that gives them $20 million to fund the petition campaign, get it on the ballot, and then have money left over to, you know, pay for the campaign. Some of the investors told me recently that they've actually pledged up to $4 million, $2 million would be paid if it passes in November. But I think that's the way they've explained it to me is that they're going to be using that money to secure sites. They wanted to make sure they had the money available because they have these 10 grow sites under option, and they have not acquired them yet. Most of them are owned by other people than these investors, but they do have a contract option to buy them. And so this remaining $2 million, I think, would be used to buy the land. From that point, they would all have to raise, they've estimated somewhere between $20 and $40 million per site to build these factory farms, growth sites is what they're calling them. And that's where the marijuana would be grown indoors. And the investors are telling me various things about how much they're going to grow from, you know, 20,000 pounds in their first year to, I think one investor told me last week that he could produce up to 94,000 pounds of marijuana in his growth site.
Now, you talk about 12 investors from this area. How many investors overall, and how were the sites spread out? Lisa, you mentioned there were three in this area, proposed to be in this area.
Well, the 10 growth sites are all controlled by limited liability companies. So there are 10 of these. And we went through and counted, you know, the folks who've been publicly identified and then through interviews identified additional folks who've been, you know, involved. So, for example, in Columbus, there is a growth site owned by an entrepreneur named Richard Kirk, who is the president and founder of Hallmark Campus Communities. And he recently did a private placement offering registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, where he raised $1.8 million from six investors who've not been named. He hasn't identified them and I don't think has any plans to. There's another investor who raised, I think, $2.5 million, and they've already sold shares to, I think it's 23 different investors. Most of the people I've talked to said they intend to raise additional capital from other investors, and they won't say, you know, who they're going to get the money from. But a lot of them are cognizant of the fact that they're going to have to raise, you know, $20 to $30 million to build these factories. And it's not like you can get a bank loan to start a marijuana business. It's a Schedule I drug, so You can't finance it using conventional means. So that means you either have to do some kind of a private placement offering or find additional investors who will, you know, give you cash to in exchange for, you know, ownership of the facility.
One of my questions about this ownership and selling shares in these things, I mean, there's going to be a marijuana control commission set up, which is supposedly supposed to regulate this. Would they have to report all of the investors to that commission?
Well, they've said that the control commission will operate like the casino control commission, and that's what you have to do for them. They've also said that the people who are buying in are required to do to go through criminal background checks, and they vet these people using their own investigative measures.
Well, you mentioned a criminal background check. I suppose if they had a marijuana charge, that would count against them then, yes?
Well, that's a good question, but I don't think they've answered that question. So they say they've done criminal background checks and that all the people that are in the movement are good to go and, you know, good people, essentially. But they won't tell you, you know, this guy has a conviction for this and we let him in anyway because of this reason. They're not giving you the details of their background. They're
so they just take that background check and they'll make their own decisions, the way that would be set up.
That's right. And, you know, they're cognizant of the fact that if bad news gets out, it harms their credibility. So, you know, you could argue that they have an incentive to vet them thoroughly. But we really don't know how thorough the vetting process is.
One thing I'd mention is Dan has a great series of stories running on WCPO.com right now about a number of these investors. It was launched on Monday, and there's a really neat interactive that he created that shows how they're connected and really how they're not. And the narrative is great in that, you know, there's been a lot of pushback here from individuals who say this is creating a monopoly. And then when you begin to talk to these investors, it sounds like they're very competitive and they're very eager to be that marijuana, you know, model that rises to the top in Ohio. So it's a great series. It tells us a lot about who these people are, and hopefully we can keep learning more about who the investors
are. So
they're
going to be very competitive.
That's what they say.
I'm assuming the product could be different from each of the growers, right? I assume there's varying qualities in marijuana, and some may grow one kind and some may grow. Is that true?
Yeah. When I was in Colorado traveling, myself and Emily Maxwell, a photojournalist at WCPO, traveled across the state to a number of different dispensaries and grow facilities, and the models are vastly different. We toured one grow facility that they sort of, off on the side would dub themselves the Walmart of marijuana. They wanted to be like the biggest producer in the state, and they were working toward that. And there was another that was very focused on, an all-natural product that was pesticide-free, and they were creating their own...
organic? I mean, are we talking...
Organic, yeah. You know, pesticides are a big issue in this industry. And so once the industry takes hold, you really do see, variations in what the products are and then all the way down to a personal taste.
We're talking about two issues on the November ballot in Ohio related to legalizing marijuana in the state, and we'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. We're sorting through all the details of issues 2 and 3 on the Ohio ballot in November related to legalizing marijuana in the state. Joining me are three reporters who have been closely following the topic. 9 on Your Side, WCPO.com, government and politics reporter Lisa Bernard-Kuhn, and business reporter Dan Monk, along with WVXU's politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. We'd like to answer your questions. You can call in at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Our discussion today, though, is strictly to explain the issues, what they mean, what you'll be voting for. We're not talking about the pros and the cons of either of the issues today. We're just explaining what they mean so you can make an educated decision when you do cast your vote. So we were talking about this controlling board, and one of the things that we didn't mention is who can be on it. And there are some very specific descriptions of the type of people they're looking to serve on this board. Lisa, do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So this is expected to be a 7-member board, this Marijuana Control Commission. And I've got it right here in front of me. Who exactly the type of individuals that they're looking for. This cannot be anyone who served as an elected public official in the past 8 years prior to their appointment. That has to include a licensed Ohio physician, a law enforcement officer, an attorney in Ohio, an Ohio-based patient advocate, and a resident who has experienced who has demonstrated some experience owning, growing it, and managing their own business. How many have I counted there? The last one, I think I'm missing one there.
Well,
a member of the public. So One of the resources that are out there certainly for individuals is responsible.
And somebody with experience in business in general.
That's right.
And then also somebody with experience specifically in the legal marijuana industry.
So that's an oddity, isn't it? As an Ohio resident who's demonstrated experience in the legal marijuana industry. So I don't have any guesses.
That may be a hard one to find.
Somebody who's just moved here from Colorado.
Perhaps.
Something like that.
Or who has invested in one of these places.
Yeah, but this commission has a big job. You know, as we were talking about before, they're going to be charged with really creating the framework and the foundation for an entirely new government regulatory body. And the amendment's very clear on what the charge of this commission can do, and it sets in place a number of dates that certain things have to happen. And as you work through those dates, it allegedly gets you to the point where as early as September 2016, the first legal marijuana could be sold in Ohio if all goes according to plan here.
And does the marijuana, if it's sold in Ohio, have to be grown in Ohio?
Yes.
Okay. Just clarifying that.
Yes.
So it's not like
not only in Ohio,
but
at one of these 10 growth centers.
And in one of the licensed retail stores.
Right. And retail licensing is another more complicated issue because there's this local option. The way you get a retail license is by, if I understand this correctly, you do a local option like you do with a liquor license. So not only do you have to pass the licensing requirements set up by the Marijuana Control Board, but you have to convince voters in your precinct that it's a good idea for you to open a store in your neighborhood. So
I'm sorry.
That's exactly right.
So as we talk about putting this all together, and I know you folks have been to Colorado and looking at some of the aspects of it there, many other states really have dealt with medical marijuana to some extent. Talk a little bit about that role here. Some people are surprised that medical marijuana wasn't put on the ballot first before this full-blown business plan.
That's right. So if this were to pass in Ohio, Ohio would become the first state in the country to legalize medical and recreational at the same time. There's about 23 states that have some medical marijuana laws on the books. And Colorado, in 2014, became the first state to begin recreational marijuana sales. And going back again to the way that states are approaching this, each state that is taking this issue on, they're coming up with their entirely own framework for how to address that. And in Ohio, what we're seeing is something incredibly unique in that, you know, this framework is entirely driven by Responsible Ohio's amendment and the investment that's being made by these 10 backers of the campaign.
You know, when you talk about the regulatory infrastructure that they want to set up, the whole idea behind their approach is that if you have a limited number of growers They can be tightly regulated, and you can make sure that that they innovate, that they produce high-quality product at a low price, and most importantly, they produce marijuana that can drive drug dealers out of business. So that's the whole rationale behind the Responsible Ohio Plan. Whether it ends up working that way or not, that's what all these business leaders think they're going to be able to accomplish because, you know, they have financial backgrounds. They know how to market. Some of these guys are great branding experts. Some of them are very knowledgeable in research, and they're all doing research on how to grow marijuana, the best kind of yields you can get, what different kinds of strains are good for medical products, or what strains are good for the oils that people are using in Colorado, as opposed to just smoking marijuana. So I think what they're trying to do is bring the private marketplace to bear. And by gaining the efficiency of capitalism, they're going to be able to drive out the black market.
And you would have to go into these communities precinct by precinct and ask people, do you want us to be able to sell this product in your neighborhood?
Yeah.
And people can say yay or nay.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, Brian is calling from Columbus. Hi, Brian. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, you know, with what seems to be a monopoly, you know, or this is where the direction it's headed, how does somebody who, you know, doesn't come from, you know, means get into the business, who is passionate about, you know, helping people in the medical marijuana side of it? How does somebody get into it? It seems like, you know, all these people are millionaires, and, you know, how does somebody who's not, you know, get into it just to run a store?
Well, when we asked that question to Responsible Ohio, their response to us is a number of ways. There will be these 1,100 retail locations, retail licenses that individuals, entrepreneurs can go out, apply for, and get, and launch their own dispensaries, retail dispensaries. That does take a lot of startup and capital, but that's one response that they give us. They also say, you know what, if our 10 investors, our 10 sites, rather, aren't meeting demand, the Control Commission can require that additional sites, additional grow facilities be put in place. Again, it's a hefty sum to get out there and get that started up, but that's their argument for why they believe that this is an open market and a place where, you know, entrepreneurs can fit in.
There are also medical dispensaries. How many of those are
I don't know
authorized?
Off the top of my head.
And marijuana product manufacturing facilities. And on the point of how do you get into the retail business, one interesting thing about the backers of this amendment are that the founders are planning to raise $50 million for what they're calling an opportunity fund to finance the startup of retail stores. So what they're going to provide is cash, and I've heard estimates between $250,000. I mean, you could spend $1 million developing a retail store, but I've heard $200,000-$300,000 get you into the retail business, and then this opportunity fund would also provide consulting services for finding the best site, navigating the regulatory process, getting your local option approved.
So they're saying that could be then for a smaller business person who didn't have a lot of startup money, that would help them get started.
Well, it could be like a neighborhood store, I mean, you know, that sells other products as well.
Right.
Is that true? So it doesn't have to only sell marijuana. It can sell other things as well?
Go ahead.
Theoretically, yes. I mean, I think,
I don't think there's a restriction on it. Yeah.
I mean,
just solely a marijuana store.
I mean, if they sell marijuana, they're going to sell papers, rolling papers, number one. And they might sell munchies and sodas and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it might be like a little neighborhood type store.
One point to mention, as Dan was talking about this opportunity fund and the need and the desire to raise capital there, again, that ties back to this idea that, you know, an entrepreneur who wants to get into this industry and deal directly with, you know, the legal marijuana side, they're not going to be able to go to a bank and get a traditional, you know, small business loan. And so you're going to need, you know, opportunity funds and, you know, opportunities like that that get you started because the traditional financing just isn't available.
Brian, I hope that answered your question. Do you have any other questions? Any follow-up, Brian? Okay, thank you so much, Brian. We're going to go now to Greg in Dayton. Hi, Greg. What's your question?
Oh, hi. Well, I was recently in Colorado at a retail marijuana shop, and one of the things that the gentleman behind the counter told us was that they were getting 22 or 22.5% in taxes per sale. So, and he also had mentioned that a majority of that goes to Colorado schools. So I just wanted to get some input regarding how much the state of Ohio is going to try to tax this if it passes and what that money would be used for.
Well, I mean, as I understand, what retail stores are going to pay a flat tax that's equal to 5% of gross revenues before their expenses. And then they're going to have to pay all of the other state business taxes that go along with running a business in Ohio.
And the revenue, the way, once those taxes are paid, right, the revenue breakdown would look like this. 55% of that tax revenue would go to cities and townships based on their size. 30% would go to counties based on their size. And then 15% would go to this Marijuana Control Commission that we were talking about to fund their operations.
And you can bet this is going to be one sales point for this thing because the legislature, you know, in recent years has taken so much money away from local governments that this is one way to get some of it back.
Yeah, one thing that we've heard Mayor Cranley here in Cincinnati talk about is, you know, using the revenue from pot sales to fill potholes, if you will. So using, you know, this legal marijuana tax revenue to go toward our infrastructure needs. And you hear a lot of that in other states that have done this. Now, when we were in Colorado and talked to policymakers there, one of the governor, Colorado's Governor Hickenlooper, one of his advisors told us, you know, there's a lot of reasons, a lot of arguments for marijuana legalization. There's the social justice issue. There's the medical side of the argument. Tax revenue probably isn't it. Yes, we've seen a boost, but it's not going to solve all the woes that government budgets face right now.
And that person who walks into the store to buy marijuana is going to pay a 5% sales tax on it.
Period. Right.
Yeah.
Just like you would on 5% sales tax on marijuana on top of the, what is this Hamilton County sales tax? I mean,
107%.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's funny. It just feels that way.
Yeah. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about legalizing marijuana in Ohio and the issues coming up on the November ballot. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about issues 2 and 3 on the Ohio ballot in November, which deal with the legalization of marijuana in the state. Joining me are three reporters who've been closely following the topic. Nine on Your Side, WCPO.com, government and politics reporter Lisa Bernard-Kuhn and business reporter Dan Monk, along with WVXU's politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by sending us a question or a comment on Facebook or Twitter or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Our discussion today is strictly to explain the issues. We are not talking about the pros and cons of either issue. We're going to go to James now in Milford. James, what's your question?
Well, it's more of a statement. You know, I keep hearing two words thrown around that I don't think even apply to these two amendments. That's free market and legalization. It's still going to be a Schedule I drug. You can still have the chance of the government coming in and shutting it down federally. And it's it's not a free market system. If I have to raise $300,000 to even begin to consider even having a retail spot, a free market system would be me in my apartment or house growing a few plants, making a spectacular product, and getting demand built up for me to grow more and more each time I decide to do a harvest. What's being discussed here is not legalization, it's regulation. We don't need more laws. We need to get rid of the laws that don't work.
Your thoughts on that? Is that
Dan?
Well said, for one thing. I mean, there are free market principles that are being applied to this industry that would be created and highly regulated by the state. It is a form of free market capitalism, as free as, you know, the defense industry, as free as workers' comp, as free as the utility industry.
Drugs, alcohol, you know, any number of things, which are legal, but they're regulated.
Right.
James, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. There is some discussion about the ballot language here, and Responsible Ohio is not very happy with the ballot language that the Secretary of State, James Husted, has come up with. What's the disagreement?
Well, Responsible Ohio has gone to the Ohio Supreme Court because they don't like some of the language that John Husted, the Secretary of State, his ballot board, when they approve the official language that's going to go on the ballot. It made reference to recreational marijuana. They don't like that. They think that's prejudicial and it's misleading. And, you know, they'd rather have some kind of term like, you know, just personal use rather than recreational. They don't like the word monopoly being in the title of this thing. That drives them crazy because they say this is not a monopoly. It's not going to be a monopoly. It's going to be a highly competitive business, as Dan was pointing out, with these growers, and the retailers too, you know, are going to be competing with one another. So the Supreme Court's got to deal with this fairly quickly, because the ballots have to be printed, ready to go by October 6th. For Ohio's early voting period. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of time to hash this out, but it's being briefed before the Ohio Supreme Court right now.
Joe's calling from Fort Thomas. Hi, Joe. What's your question?
Well, I was wondering if this ballot issue contained language regarding age limits and residency requirements for the retail places. You know, do they have to check IDs? Do they have to make sure they're a Ohio resident?
Lisa, Dan? Mm.
There is an age restriction. Yeah, you can't sell to minors.
You can't sell to minors. Yeah. You have to be 21 in order to be able to buy this.
But that's correct.
I've not read anywhere. Maybe I've missed it. I don't know that you have to be an Ohio resident to buy it, do you?
Or to have a retail store, for that matter.
No,
I don't know that that's
I don't. I have not seen any language to that effect.
I haven't either. My understanding is that so while the age limit is a very specific requirement that's called out in the ballot language, there are some things that will be fine-tuned by the Control Commission. For example, you will be able to buy marijuana legally in Ohio if this were to pass, if you were a visitor to the state. But what amounts? I don't know that there's specific language in the amendment now, but the Control Commission, you know, could perhaps have the job of fine-tuning that. I know in Colorado, for example, there are limits on, if you're an out-of-state customer, what you can purchase in a day's time. And the price you're paying as an out-of-state customer is higher as well. And that's all intended to limit, how much marijuana could possibly leave the state illegally.
And it would certainly be an issue in the Cincinnati market because all you have to do is drive across the bridge. From Kentucky into Ohio, or come across from the border from Indiana to buy marijuana. So they're going to have to address this somehow.
Absolutely.
And I suppose Kentucky may have to look into what they want to do if people drive across the border with it, because it would not be legal to possess it in Kentucky, correct?
Yeah, and what you're seeing in Colorado right now is that neighboring states are suing the state of Colorado, saying that, you know, this is a burden on local law enforcement in these border towns, you know, just north and east and south of Colorado, where legal, you know, marijuana that was purchased legally in Colorado is crossing the border. And then small, you know, counties have to use their limited resources to track that down.
Tom from Norwood's written in and wants to know if an employer who tests for drugs with pot having a longer life, will legalization affect employer regulations on that?
As the amendment is written, employers, because, you know, if marijuana were legalized in Ohio, that doesn't change the rules for employers and their own in-house rules for what you can and can't do while you're at work.
So they could still screen for...
Yes, they could still screen for marijuana, you know.
Sure.
The idea being they don't want you on the job drinking alcohol. They don't want marijuana in your system while you're on the job as well. And that was very clear language written into this amendment. Other states like Colorado didn't have that in there initially, and there was some battle over that over time.
Jenny is calling from Linwood. Hi, Jenny. What's your question?
Hi, Marianne. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about the distribution of funds towards treatment providers. Similarly to the casino funding, there's an offset or a set aside for gambling addiction, and I wondered how much, what the percentage is that's going to be set aside for marijuana addiction after this money is accumulated.
I believe the 15% of that tax revenue we talked about that goes to the Marijuana Control Commission, I believe a portion of that has to be set aside at the commission's discretion to go toward a solution for treatment programs. The amendment, you can find the full language at responsibleohio.org, or you can go to yesonthreeohio.com. But either way, that's really the solid resource that lays out very specific issues like that.
Let's talk. Thanks, Jenny. Let's talk quickly about issue two. And this would object to the way these 10 growers are set up. Is that correct?
It would object to what they call monopolies in general, whether it's marijuana or some other issue. It would basically attempt to negate issue three if issue three were passed.
So there has been a lot of discussion on what if both of them pass?
Well, if both of them pass, according to Secretary of State Husted, issue two would prevail. I have a feeling that the responsible Ohio people aren't going to accept that, and the issue would end up in court. And that's where it would be decided, because that's kind of thing has happened in Ohio in the past, where you've had these kind of conflicting ballot issues that have both passed. And it does end up going to court, and it's usually decided in court over, the legal issues involved.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment for us today. We go now to Nicole in Northside. Hi, Nicole. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks so much. I have a question that I actually have two related questions addressing timelines. One of them came up earlier. I believe that Lisa addressed the fact that a commission has the authority to add more grow facilities if it is deemed that the need for, say, all of the medicine needed in the state of Ohio is not being met. I find myself thinking that could be a fairly lengthy timeline, and I was wondering if any of your guests have given any thought to what that might look like. And I also wonder if you could go back and address the issue of the local municipalities needing to essentially vote to accept stores in their neighborhood. What kind of timeline would that be on, and how would that occur?
Dan, you want to take a piece of that? You look like you did otherwise.
Well, is it every May that you can have these local option elections?
Yeah.
Isn't it
Yes. I mean, but you can actually have local option elections at any time.
Okay.
You know, if you can qualify for the ballot. But
Okay. Well, what one of the investors
generally
was telling...
speaking, you know, when they deal with liquor issues, say liquor permits, liquor licenses, they're done on a precinct basis. So it's a very tiny area, you know, that we're talking about, and very few people voting on it. And I don't know if there is anything in the structure of this amendment which says that a larger group of the community would have to make a decision about, you know, a particular store. I don't see how you could do it any other way but by precinct.
Okay. I was just going to say, one of the investors told me that their expectation is if it passes in November, by the following May, there will be local option elections active all over Ohio.
I would almost guarantee you that, yes.
And then by the following fall, all of those stores would be open for business. So this guy, Bill Foster, who's got a company in White Oak, said that he is trying to get his Hamilton County growth site, the one that's in the Senco plant over in Anderson Township, he's trying to get that up and running so that he can have product to supply retailers by the fall of 2016.
Yeah, if the voters approve the license.
Right.
Right.
Nicole, did that answer your question?
I think Nicole had one more.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And Nicole, I think your initial question was related to the supply and demand issue and when could additional grow facilities be added. And it's my understanding that after the first 4 full years of legalization, the commission is to conduct this assessment that will determine what the market demand is, if we're meeting that demand, both on the recreational and medical side, and if additional facilities are needed. And then more regularly, I think the commission is to take that work up, but I don't have to what extent that interval looks like.
Okay. Nicole, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. One of the points I'd like to bring up when we talk about issue two and the monopoly idea, isn't that what the casinos did? They said there could only be 4 casinos. How is that different?
Well, I think issue two is not retroactive, for one thing.
Yeah,
it's all,
that's
it's
true.
All,
that's true.
So if you have a monopoly now, you're good to go. And I think there is a difference between an amendment that is passed after being placed on the ballot by legislators.
Yes.
And an amendment that is passed after a petition drive.
Yes.
One of them takes effect 30 days after the election. The other one takes effect immediately.
Right. That's exactly right. Yes.
Which is the one that takes effect immediately?
Well, this one would take effect immediately. Or no, the legislative one would take effect immediately.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that would theoretically that would supersede the issue three.
Yeah.
Okay.
That still may end up in the courts, though.
It's going to end up in the courts.
If
that happens and both of them pass, I will guarantee you right now it's going to end up in the courts.
Where do the politicians stand on all of this? Have they?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah,
really,
that's a very interesting question. You know, they're all over the map. I mean, they're not. You know, some of them just don't want to talk about it at all. They'd rather talk about anything in the world than legalizing marijuana in Ohio. You know, I think if you went in the Republican legislature. There's a lot of opposition to it there because that's where issue two came from. And issue two came about because there were, you know, some pretty powerful interests that have influence in the legislature who are opposed to this and are going to campaign against it. And that's why we have issue two on the ballot. So, you know, you can say, okay, I think it's fair to say that the Republican majority in the House or in the Ohio legislature is probably opposed to this thing. Doesn't mean all of them are.
We have a call now from Brad in Middletown. Hi, Brad. What's your question?
Well, yes. I joined the program late, and I'm not sure if this issue was addressed already, but I don't understand why the marijuana issue has to be entangled with the state constitution. Can't we just pass that as a law?
Well, yes, you could. Absolutely, you could. But that's not going to happen. And the legislature wasn't inclined to do that, so people had to go out and do a petition initiative, and they were successful in doing that.
So had there been enough lawmakers and they introduced a law that
yeah,
it wouldn't have
that.
To have been about?
I think it's been in the General Assembly
the General
for 17 years.
It has been over and over again.
And it's never been
And
enacted.
Never gotten out of committee or got stalled, you know, died at the end of sessions. But, yeah, the legislature can do that. When the legislature does not act, that's when you see groups of citizens, people, you know, interest groups go out, collect petition signatures and get things like this on the ballot.
And we know that there are medical marijuana advocates out there that are still lobbying the legislature as we speak, hoping that they'll act before November and sort of preempt, this move.
What's the benefit to that?
There are a number of bills out there, my understanding in talking with the medical marijuana advocates are that the bills that they're pursuing would really meet the needs of the patients that we're talking about here. Largely, we're talking about children, cancer patients who are recovering from cancer treatments, and there's some question from the advocates about just exactly how the Responsible Ohio Plan will meet their needs. And as Nicole, who called in earlier, mentioned, whether there will be enough medical marijuana, enough medicine available, and the kinds of medicine available for the patients who would seek this out.
Right. The medical marijuana people, you know, that are pushing that kind of legislation, they look at Responsible Ohio's amendment and say, they're pushing it to the side. It's just one aspect of a much larger money-making, profitable business.
Brad, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Again, our number, 513-419-7100. We talk about, you talked about the competitiveness and how different strains of marijuana are different growing patterns and all that. What about the potency? Is there anything in this that regulates the potency of marijuana? From what I hear, some of the marijuana grown today is much stronger than marijuana that was grown in the 70s, for example.
So that would be another job of the commission, right, is to figure out how do you begin to regulate things like potency. You know, one of the really eye-opening things about the legal marijuana world is that the growing piece of this business are what are called edibles, right? So marijuana-infused brownies, cookies, treats. And in Colorado, where the first recreational edible products were sold, they out of the gate had a hard time regulating this potency. And so the idea of potency being, you know, if you're looking at a cookie that has THC in it, if you're taking a bite of that cookie, is all the THC concentrated in that one bite? Or is it spread out, you know, also throughout? And just how strong is it altogether? And they're just now putting rules in place to regulate those kinds of things. But again, that would be a job of the Marijuana Control Commission to figure out what's the right, you know, levels for Ohio.
And marijuana would not just be in these retail stores sold to smoke. It could be sold in any of these types of products then. Is that what the law would allow?
That's right. So you're talking about not just the plant, the flowering plant.
No.
But the edibles. The
brownies, the cookies, the, you know.
Right.
You name it.
It's a whole, within the industry, it's a subset of the industry that comes with its own set of regulations. And it's drinks and these are food products that in the rest of the world, the FDA has a role in regulating, you know, that they're safe to consume off a shelf. And so, again, in states like Colorado, they're wrestling with how do we create a state framework that tackles some of these issues?
So this commission would really have a lot of a lot of work to do in terms of, and perhaps need a lot of money to be able to do that. So I guess it's a matter of if there's enough money in there to handle that as well. We're about out of time. I want to point to the WCPO Channel 9 Scripps website and tell us the website.
Yeah, WCPO.com.
Simple enough. Okay. I was saying that and it just was leaving my brain. It's written right in front of me here. But a lot of information there that you guys have been working on for a long time, so we certainly point folks to that if you'd like some more information. Thanks, everybody, for being here.
Thank you so much.
Very interesting. And we've been talking with Nine on Your Side, WCPO.com, government and politics reporter Lisa Bernard-Kuhn and business reporter Dan Monk, along with WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Kevin Browinski. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney.